Hey, this is Brandon Crawford from the San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Wednesday, May 20th, 2020, and this is episode 194 of the TorchCast, the podcast by and for fans of your San Francisco Giants. Now, it's been a little more than a month since our last episode, and there's not been a ton to talk about, but we will have a lot to talk about today in terms of where baseball might be heading. But another reason we took a little bit of a break is we had a bit of a life move for Eric. He physically moved, so instead of welcoming him from a peach farm a pecan farm in Georgia, now he's by the ringing slot machines and poker tables near Las Vegas, Nevada. How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing great. The strip is 15 to 20 minutes away. With traffic, it's a half hour tops. I drove through it the other night. It's just fantastic. I'm out west. I'm with the Giants fans now. You know, I'm in the same time zone with everybody. There's, Chad and I were talking about before we came on, we don't have to do math anymore. You know, usually when we record, it's noon his time and 3 o'clock my time, and I'll kind of bullshit around a little bit and be like, oh, I got an extra 3 hours. Okay, I can do this later. And suddenly it's like 2:30. No, today I like woke up, did my morning stuff, and looked at the clock and was like, oh wow, okay, all right, I'm recording in like an hour. I gotta get moving on my morning here. You know, it's a little different, but it's great. I it was cool to make the drive cross country. I suggest to anybody to do it. We took in 9-10 states in 5 days, and saw some beautiful stuff between Alabama and Texas. Really was amazing in West Texas with the mountains. Arizona was okay. And then California was cool. I was just in this desert part, but it was just climbing mountains, and it was just cool scenery all over the place. Like, had our truck been better and I wasn't holding on to the oh shit bar the whole time, I might have gotten to appreciate it a little better. Because I got great pictures throughout the trip, except for that like 3 hour stretch in California. I didn't get nothing. And we made out here safely, and now here I am. I live in Henderson, Nevada now. I am a stone's throw from the strip. I live among the people who play and work at the casinos, and it's time for a new life. So I'm a West Coaster now. So I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be able to watch Giants baseball eventually at 7 p.m. instead of 10 p.m.
I think that's a big bonus right there is, you know, whenever baseball comes back, but sports in general, you're going to be able to watch the West Coast teams at a reasonable hour now instead of falling into that East Coast bias range, where and that's one of the main reasons, right? I mean, people don't watch West Coast teams.
But that's the thing. So what I'm learning is I'll get 4 o'clock games. You know, there's so many afternoons out east where I'm thinking, man, I'd love if I could just flip a game on right now. Now I'll be able to just flip a game on. Daytime games are earlier in the day games. Like, I already think this is the best time zone for sports, and I haven't had any live sports yet.
Mm-hmm. I love it for football, man, because the first game's at 10 o'clock.
Oh, that's so great.
It's fantastic. So it's you don't need to wake up early, but you just wake up, have some coffee, and before you know it, football's on already. It's pretty awesome. Right. You know, and then the 1 o'clock comes on, and then you get the evening game, the 5 o'clock, you know, either Monday night or Sunday night. And you're just like, boom, boom, boom. It's football all day long, but not till midnight, you know, or later. So anyway, welcome to the West Coast almost, but you're definitely in the Pacific time zone. And now I finally have a friend back in the Vegas area, so I can mooch on that whenever I get back down.
I'm everybody's new favorite friend, man. I can't tell you how many people are like, as soon as stuff opens up, man, I'm coming to visit you. As soon as stuff opens up, I'm like, yeah, please, come on, man. I wish it was open. I wish I could just roll down to the strip and hop on a poker table or jump in a poker tournament. But for the meantime, since we're all at home, I'll just keep it online and, you know, like everybody else, shelter in place as much as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know that a lot of the states are starting to open it up, and I just want to say to everyone, just be careful out there, take your precautions. Just don't be thinking this is going away anytime soon. And that's why the world is reacting this way. But let's talk about this. Baseball may or may not happen. And so here are the latest details. Now, in our last podcast and the last one before that, we did talk about the Arizona and the Arizona Florida plans, where everyone was going to be quarantined in their hotels. They weren't going to be with family and friends. And we were kind of wondering, how is this really going to be possible? Well, since then, things have evolved. States have started to relax some of their restrictions. And basically, this is the latest. So the owners approved a proposal that's been sent to the Players Association last week. And these are the highlights. And the Players Association has not yet responded. First of all, it would be an 82-game season starting in July. So basically, it'd be about half as long as normal. They would institute, they propose anyway. This is all the proposals from the owners, mind you. So it doesn't mean that these things are going to be accepted by the players, nor may we ever see them. The DH would be instituted across baseball to protect pitchers. We're going to talk about that at a later date, I think, with Willie.
Yeah, I think that is going to be a separate one to get into.
Because, I don't want to digress too much, but I would say this. Eric likes the DH and I don't. That's fine. We won't have to give our reasons for it right now. What I would be upset about is the fact that the DH would be instituted this year. If things got back to normal in 2021 or 2022, they're not going to reinstitute the pitchers hitting.
They can't. They just can't go back to it.
Yeah. So that's why I'm a little bummed about this particular part of the proposal, because even though I recognize the DH is probably coming at some point in the NL, this would accelerate it to like now. And I don't like that, but it is what it is. Major League Baseball has to have enough coronavirus tests to not deplete the public supply. And that's a really main one right now. And testing has been ramping up significantly. There's a lot of new tests that have been approved by the FDA, including an at-home saliva kit, nasal swabs, not that one that pokes your brain all the time. So hopefully by July, they'll know that there's enough capacity where they would not be affecting the public supply, because they're talking about 10,000 tests per week. Eric,
Wow.
that's a lot, okay?
That's massive.
So to minimize travel, teams would have to play only against division rivals, as well as teams in the corresponding geographic division of the opposite league. So if the Giants were playing, they'd be playing the A's from the AL West, that kind of thing. Teams would also hold another version of spring training for 2 or 3 weeks, starting in mid-June, either at their home parks or back in their complexes in Arizona and Florida. And they didn't state it here, but I've heard that spring training won't necessarily involve games against other teams. It would just be a bunch of inter squad between teams kind of games. So as to, again, limit the exposure. At
Well,
least
I
they
mean,
would.
if you need 50 guys on your roster, you got to get them all some practice at a time anyway.
Yeah. So there's no point in playing other teams. They already did it a little bit earlier in the year. They need to get back into baseball shape and playing against each other. It's not quite the same thing, but it's going to be good enough for to get them ready for the year. Also, this has been a recent development in the last couple of days, but California, Texas, and some other states have stated that it may be possible for pro sports to start in June without fans. Even Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, has stated that, which just shocked me. I was like, really? Wow. Because obviously California has been one of the most conservative states in how they're treating this pandemic. So that actually blew me away. So there is a chance, if everything gets cleared and they move forward, for the Giants actually to play at Oracle Park this year. I think that's pretty
Yeah,
cool.
that surprised me, that part of it. I don't know if this is a money talks moment for California, or if maybe because California's done such a good job of slowing the spread in certain places that they feel more comfortable doing things like opening the stadium without fans during this time when they didn't feel comfortable doing that 2 months ago. Because, as you know, with this being an ever-evolving crisis, we don't always know what we're faced with. It's the old, you plan for the worst and hope for the best. And they were planning for the worst when they first had already said, we're not going to do this for a while, we're not going to do this for a while. So that's how this will come out with all the restrictions being rolled back. So I was surprised to hear that too. I did not think California was ready to do their own stadiums, because I thought that they had said something like through July or something, or June or something, or ready like that. So,
Oh,
I'd
Newsom
seen
had
that.
said through September.
That was it. Absolutely, yeah, seeing the Giants at Oracle Park, even with no fans, that would just be so nice. You know, I've been watching some of these South Korean, the KBO games on ESPN late at night, and it's like you can tell they're in their home parks. They just don't have the fans there. And, you know, it's probably good to see that instead of just seeing a random Giants Diamondbacks game in Surprise, Arizona.
Yeah, I'm totally for that. And, you know, people aren't going to go to games this year if we have a season. That's fine. I think people are going to be fine with watching it on TV. We're going to get, we would get baseball in some format should this move forward, which is great. So teams would also have expanded rosters. You just mentioned perhaps up to 50 players per team. That'd be the total roster with 30 available for each game. So they were already expanding to 26 this year. So this is an additional four, but they need that kind of flexibility with what's going on. And they need to have that reserve of 20 should, obviously players are going to get hurt, but also should players come down with COVID. So apparently they have this whole isolation protocol in effect where they would do contact tracing and that person would be in quarantine and then they would have to watch everyone who was in contact. That's where I am a little afraid of where things can go awry is if one player gets it and they go, oh, okay, well, he was by the manager and this coach and these players and those two players and this clubhouse person. And, you know, they trace it. Oh, 25 people have been within 6 feet of him in the last 24 hours, right? Okay, let's watch those people. And like two of them get sick. Well, again, you can be contagious before you test positive and before you have symptoms. So I don't know if that's going to work necessarily, but I'm not an epidemiologist. So I'll just leave it, you know. And they aren't either. The owners aren't either. But
I mean, I hope they're at least consulting
information. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So we'll see how that goes. Okay, the postseason itself, which you know is where they get a lot of their money. This is part of the reason why they would do this. They would expand it to 14 teams from 10 with two additional wild cards in each league. So the team with the best record in each league would earn a spot in the division series. So they'd basically get a first round bye. This is something we already talked about. That baseball was talking about in terms of 2021 or 2022, they would just be implementing it much earlier. So the wild cards and other division winners who do not have the best record would then stage a best of three series to determine the rest of the division series field. So gone would be the wild card entry game. It would just be three game series between wild cards and division series winners or division winners. And then again, the number one seed in each league gets a bye and goes straight to the next
level. I like
level.
Implementing that with a shortened season because the playoffs are going to be a crapshoot anyways. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. There's no ways around it, especially if, you know, teams are only playing certain teams during the season. They'll be seeing other teams for the first time, and one's pitching might just immediately overpower another team's hitting, and that series is over like that. But at least this forces the teams to play, you know, aside from the number one seed, to play one, two, three, four full series, basically, to win the World Series title instead of just a game and then three series or three series. So I do like that it adds that extra layer to it because it's going to be a crapshoot postseason no matter what. We could see great teams that should be competing, contending every year, not make the playoffs in an 82-game season because there's just not enough time for them to get their stuff together.
Yeah, that's a big thing, right? Like if you took – last year, I just jumped to, it's a little more than 80 games. This is like almost 90 games. So it's near July 4th or whatever. You still had the Dodgers. You still had the Braves, the Astros, the Twins, and the Yankees in the top spots in the division. But the wild cards would have been slightly different. I mean, the Cubs would have been in. Actually, the Cubs would have won the NL Central on the
stage. Yeah, they were.
So I totally agree with you. I think a long baseball season, the cream really does rise to the top. You've had 162 games. You don't need 14 teams in the playoffs, even though they're probably going to do that. But with an 82-game season, you have a lot more wiggle room for teams who go on a 20-game streak where they're 18-2, and that propels them to the division, you know, title, whereas if they played 162 games, maybe they would have faded away. So I do like that because it gives those other teams that truly are good that maybe had a bad streak in a part of those 82 games, they still will squeak in that 14-team field. So I think that's a good move.
I mean, there's teams like the Mariners from last year who jumped out to a great start, who possibly could have made, I think they were in the spot for a wild card at that moment still. So they could make the playoffs under this year's scenario. And you know, they could win it all then under this scenario, because as we know, anybody can win it all. It is a crapshoot when it gets there.
Yeah. So the problem with this whole season, though, is that a lot of the revenue has come from tickets, parking, concessions, and all of that. So they want the players to share the industry's financial burdens. And this is a big sticking point. And this is probably where the players are going to say no, and they're going to have to compromise on this. But the league has proposed paying players based on how much money is earned during the shortened season, with teams splitting revenues 50-50 with athletes. So many players already believe they've given up enough when they agreed in March to not take their salaries unless games were played in exchange for service credit. So they'd get a full year of credit even if they only played part of a year, because it impacts how much money they can earn in the future years. So that was a big one. But the players have already said, look, we already accepted a prorated salary, essentially, for the credit, exchange for the credit years. So if you played half a season, you get 50% of your salary. But now they're talking about just splitting revenues 50-50 with athletes, which would make a lot of the athletes earn much less. So yeah, the players are not into this. They are not into this at all. So I think this is going to be the big sticking point. I don't know what the players are going to do.
Well, I think the players are going to stand their ground on this, because the agreement by with the service time is the key, I think, for them here. Yeah. By getting the full year service time, no matter how long the season is, you know, because they made that deal, they want to stick with it because they don't want to lose that part of the deal. I think that that is what it is. And at this point, it will be less. And I understand the player stance where they're saying, look, it's not our fault that you might have a bit of a financial burden from the COVID. I mean, I understand there are industries that are getting breaks and things like that. But, you know, I will always side with the players, and I agree with them here. Mm-hmm. You know, the 50-50 revenue sharing is not going to cover what it needs to be covering. Just because you're not going to make as much money doesn't mean I deserve not to make as much money. I'm using my talents in the exact same way that I'd be using those talents if you paid me double the regular price that you owe me for that. That's what I signed the contract for, to do this stuff. So if I'm still performing the exact same function, I should be getting paid the exact same. And that's where I come down with the players on this, and that's why I think they will stick their heels in the ground. They will. I don't think they'll budge on that necessarily. I think owners are going to have to swallow it for a little bit. I think they're just going to have to deal with the fact that they might have to lose some money this year.
I completely agree with you. So as March 26th, we knew this was a pandemic. We knew that baseball was going to be impacted. But at that point, the players agreed to prorated salaries based on the number of games played. So Trevor Bauer, the Cincinnati Reds pitcher, he wrote on Twitter, quote, "The right thing to do is honoring the agreement we have had in place for months. Players are ready, willing, able, and excited to play. When MLB wants to honor the agreement they agreed to, there will be baseball." End quote. And I think that's really important, because the players are not responsible for parking and concessions and marketing and all these things. That's the job of the owner and his team that he puts together to run the business. The players are just the product on the field. If they, like you just said, if they're performing their part of the contract, which is go play baseball, right, and it's for a prorated number of games, then that's what they should be paid for contractually. And that's what they agreed to on March 26th. And now I think the owners are like, basically saying, oh shit, I didn't know this was going to happen this long. I didn't realize baseball was going to be out for months. We had no idea. Boy, we're losing. And one estimate here, the Associated Press projects that each game, they're going to be losing $640,000. This is during the 82-game season when they have no fans and prorated salaries. So, of course, players are skeptical of this number. But point being, this burden should not be on the players. I'm fully, fully with you here. And if you want the players to buy in, I'm really shocked that they proposed this.
Right.
Hey, you know, the money that we're making, normally we just took all of it. Now we'll be nice and split it with you 50-50. So, you know, you can share in it. And they're like, dude, no, we earn more in prorated salaries than we would in this scenario. And that's, I think it's ridiculous.
This is an example of when crap rolls downhill. You know, they're like, well, we have to deal with this burden, so we want to pass this burden on to you, our plebes, our workers. And the workers are like, oh, wait a second, I'm still doing the same work. Just because your bottom line has been affected doesn't mean that my work isn't as valuable. Yeah. So it's tough to see how they come. Don't move the goalposts. That's what baseball is doing. Okay, well, we had this agreement. Well, now that we figured out, like you said, we're going to lose money, we'd rather have this agreement. No, wait, we already agreed to this. It's like Trevor said, they are ready, willing, and able and excited to play. I don't know. I still think there's a part of me, honestly, Chad, that still thinks that all this talk is for naught, and we might not even see baseball until 2021.
You know, I'm with you, too. I think that's a distinct possibility, because I know you just referred to moving the goalposts in terms of this agreement. But, yeah, I feel the same way moving these goalposts, where they're like, oh, we might play in Arizona. We might play in Arizona and Florida. We might play here. We might play there. We might. It's like, you know, things are just evolving so fast and so quickly. I don't see how they're going to get it all together. But stranger things have happened. I don't know. But aside from this contractual agreement, which – I'm assuming the owners will finally have to eat it if we were to move forward.
Yeah, I think so too.
And they're a bunch of millionaires and billionaires. I mean, come on. They're going to have to take an operating loss for a year. You know, they'll write it off on their taxes. They're still going to have their yachts and everything else. They're going to be fine. Okay. Yep. Not saying the players are going to be destitute either, but the owners are fine. And there's relatively fewer of the owners than there are the players, right? 700 plus players as opposed to 30 owners. So there you go. Plus co-owners. But so the problem is that they have to work, or they have to agree with the union on working conditions. And this is where it gets so sticky, Eric. This is where it's just bad. So the league sent a 67-page document to players that outlines the potential new realities of the sport amid the pandemic. It's considered the first draft, but notable items include no spitting, no sunflower seeds, no chewing tobacco, no high fives, no fist bumps, no hugs. Masks will be worn everywhere except on the field, and showering in the stadium is discouraged. And it goes further, saying any person who has a temperature of 100 degrees or experiences any of the COVID-19 symptoms will be subject to an immediate rapid diagnostic test. But see, they're already contagious, right? Anybody who tests positive will self-isolate until cleared. And then, of course, that requires two negative tests. During games, non-playing personnel must wear masks in the dugout and may be relegated to the stadium seats, where they must sit at least four seats apart
from
and two rows behind each other. Once a baseball has been put in play and touched by multiple players, it'll be tossed aside and replaced with a new one. And then between pitches, players are encouraged to be as distanced from one another as possible. There's even more, but let's talk about this first major chunk here. Okay. You and I, again, played baseball growing up. There is nothing conscious about some of these actions that they are they're going to try and prohibit. Spitting, fist bump, yelling, all those kinds of things. I mean, come on. Snot rockets from Mad Bum on the mound. I mean, these things are not – the players aren't going to sit there and consciously think, I have to spit. Oh, no, I can't. No, it's going to be just, you know. Some of these guys – have earned the right to chew tobacco as an adult, which of course I don't like, but because it sets a bad example for kids. Some of these guys rely on that, not just for the nicotine, but just the habit, right? That's what they do to go play baseball. So it's like telling Hunter Pence he can't wear high socks or whatever, you know. It's how are you going to tell these players to do these kinds of things? I mean, they want to play ball and earn their money, but to go out there and not high five, to be more than 6 feet apart from everyone, you know, the social distancing, like where they're talking runner and first baseman, they're saying like, you got to stop doing that. But there's still going to be pickoff plays. There's still going to be tags. There's still going to be plays at home plate. I mean, people are going to run into one another. They're going to try and limit the catcher, pitcher mound visits. They're going to say no to managers visiting the mound now. I don't know how they're going to get around that.
But they're
kind of
all
stuff
protected during mound meetings nowadays. It's 2020. Everybody's holding their gloves out in front of their face. That's the safest place on the field right now.
That's pretty funny. And then, you know, touched by multiple players. Now, look, foul balls, balls in the dirt. They have plenty of baseballs. That's not the worry. But they had an example where it's, you know, a base hit to right field. Right fielder throws it to the second baseman who sends it off to the shortstop. Okay, well, now four players have touched it. That's what they would do. They would throw the ball out. Not like pitcher to catcher, then back to pitcher, back to catcher,
every
back to pitcher.
Strikeout,
that's okay.
Every strikeout that goes around the horn, that ball has to be thrown out.
Yep, they said they discourage throwing around the horn. There's another tradition in baseball that would have to change. And what are they going to do? These are things that, are they going to be punishable? No, of course not. They're not going to get fines for them. So if they're not going to get fined for doing these things, they're basically asked to do it out of common courtesy. You're going to have some players trying to do their best, I imagine. But you're going to have a lot of players that go, hell no, I'm not doing any of that crap. You know, and you're going to see them just completely disregard these guidelines. And that's not going to happen. So I think it's kind of funny that they put these out there. Maybe it's just to protect the image of baseball, but
well, they're dropping the ideas in people's heads of the things that we need to pay attention to. And so that the ball players will at least get it in their heads now, months ahead of doing it. 67-page document is long, man. There's no way all these guys read through that entire document. You know, I mean, are ass pats allowable? Because, you know, it's not like you're going to then touch your own ass. I mean, if I want to tell somebody good. And the umpires and the catchers are going to be right on top of each other. Like, I have been in the same breathing space with catchers and umpires from both jobs. You know, I don't understand how you can keep that apart. You can't. It's everybody's common courtesy will come through, but unless, you know, they can actually do the testing, any person over 100. So then if you have over 100, you're pulled from the lineup, which is why there's 50 guys on the active roster.
Right.
And then you have to self-isolate until you make sure you have 2 negative tests. So you're going to immediately be subjected to a test with a fever of 100. So you're pulled that day no matter what. So you're lost one day. But say you don't have the COVID, but you're not down from 100 yet. Do you get to play the next day? Do you not get to play the next day? It's right. every little aspect of it has questions.
Yeah, this is it's bad. So everyone is also strongly encouraged to leave their hotel rooms as little as possible, avoid using taxis or rideshare services. They also are going to be prohibited from eating out in restaurants on the road. So there's a lot of things that they're not going to be in full quarantine mode, but they're going to be in a kind of quasi quarantine, which is, you know, going to be hard for some of these players who are creatures of habit. But one guy, I found this blog that was being circulated around. It's by Craig Calcaterra. I won't read the whole thing, but I'll put a link in the show notes. But he addresses this specifically about behavior control of habitually driven baseball players. You know, it's just going to be really, really hard to do. I mean, rules about when players can be during the national anthem, bans on high fives and fist bumps, bans on spitting tobacco juice and sunflower seed shells, discouraged from showering at stadiums after games. They're talking about Little League. Like, you put your uniform on at your hotel room and then go to the stadium and then walk home in, well, you can change, right? But go home and then shower at home or in your hotel room. It's pretty crazy. And of course up to 10,000 COVID-19 tests administered a week, which is going to be pretty, pretty crazy. But it just, like he says here, these protocols seem almost impossible to implement and enforce. And I think the enforcement is the big issue. The micro level of behavior control it requires implemented in a matter of weeks seems extreme, especially how routine and habit driven athletes are. Ball players spend decades learning to automate almost everything they do and tune out all distractions in order to be able to maximize performance on the field. So I think that's a huge one. It says, I love this one though. They truly embody the quote, "don't think it'll only hurt the ball club" ethos described in Bull Durham. Now they're being told that they have to think constantly about every move they make lest they fuck up and accidentally kill the 63-year-old pitching coach.
I mean, how pissed would you be? You're some 21-year-old kid, you get the COVID, and fucking Earl down on the end of the bench who's been in baseball for 45 years suddenly up and dies because you caught the COVID. I mean, I couldn't live with myself if that happened.
Exactly. It's like, oh, that was so funny. I was just thinking about that. Yeah. And that's the problem is that the players, most of them who get it, if they do get it, are going to be fine because they're young and healthy and strong. But, you know, some of the older pitching coaches and bench coaches and managers, they're in their 60s, some in their 70s, some with underlying health conditions. I mean, look at Bochy. He had a heart condition. I know he's not managing this year, but that's just an example. You're going to have those issues. And if one of those managers or pitching coaches come down with it, in fact, there's been anonymous sources of assistant Major League Baseball coaches saying, I'm scared. I have underlying health conditions. I don't want to be exposed to this stuff. I don't want to die, you know? And it's a really, really honest and real point. And like you just said, you don't want to be some, you know, rookie or some 23-year-old who they do the contact tracing because you're the one who had it on the team. Right. And then Ron Wotus gets it and kicks the bucket. Right. You're like, what the hell? Then he has to live with that guilt.
Wotus. Right.
Yeah. It was horrible. It's horrible. It is. So he goes on and he does a great job of kind of laying out all these issues that kind of popped in my mind and I'm sure popped in your mind, but puts them very eloquently down on paper. Of why this is going to be really, really hard to implement. And I don't know if it's going to happen. But on another note, you have Blake Snell, pitcher for the Rays, of course, great pitcher. He came out and he basically just said, I'm not playing, period. And not even with he's opposed to the 50-50 revenue split, but he's just straight up opposed to playing this year because he says, quote, y'all got to understand me. For me to take a pay cut is not happening because the risk is through the roof. It's a shorter season, less pay. No, I got to get my money. I'm not playing unless I get mine. Wow. Okay. And that's just the way it is for me. Like, I'm sorry you guys think differently, but the risk is way the hell higher. And the amount of money I'm making is way lower. Why would I think about doing that? So, and then he says he's scheduled to make $7 million this year and that he, quote, loves baseball to death, but is unwilling to accept multiple reductions of his salary. Quote, bro, I'm risking my life, he said. What do you mean it should not be a thing? It should 100% be a thing. If I'm going to play, I should be getting the money I signed to be getting paid. I should not be getting half of what I'm getting paid because the season's cut in half on top of a 33% cut of the half that's already there. So I'm really, really getting like 25%. On top of that, it's getting taxed. So imagine how much of I'm really making to play. You know what I'm saying? Interesting. Harper said,
wow.
He ain't lying. He's right. Hey, he's speaking the truth, bro. I ain't mad at him. Someone's got to say it. At least he's manned up and said it. Good for him. I love Snell, man. Guy's a beast, too. One of the best lefties in the game. So, yeah.
Great throwaway compliment at the end. That's funny.
I know, right?
Oh, my God. I mean, that's a lot to unpack. That guy's really full of himself. And
He tried to clarify later because he was interviewed by the Times. And he basically said, I'm just saying it doesn't make sense for me to lose all of that money and then go play. And then be in lockdown, not around my family, not around the people I love, and getting paid way the hell less. And then the risk of injury runs up every time I step on the field. So at the base bottom crux of it, if he's saying I shouldn't get paid this money to now have this increased risk of getting sick, I can understand that. Just like me, I'd be getting paid the same. What if I told my – so I have a science cruise coming up in July that I was talking to Eric about that still has yet to be canceled. And I'm the lead scientist on it, so I'm kind of like the manager. So if they say we're going – and I'm not comfortable with it, I am put in a situation of like, what do I do? Do I refuse to go? Do I jeopardize my job? Or do I somewhat risk contracting COVID being on a ship with 50 other people for a week? So I understand the root feeling of that in itself. But his focus was all about the money, the money, the money, the money, the money. And he just sounds like a spoiled brat. And yeah. I think there's many better ways he could have handled this as opposed to the money. Because, you know, people, you know, what do we have? Almost 20% unemployment in America right now. You know, 20, 30 million people, more than that, out of work right now that are earning nothing.
They would take a reduced salary over their regular salary at this point, too.
Well, and that's the thing. There's people who are checkers at Safeway right now who do have a job. They also now have an increased risk in their job, just like he would. In fact, I would say way higher of a risk because they're interacting with customers across the spectrum every single day. And yet they're still working for their $10, $12, $14 an hour. But he's not willing to work for his $3.5 million. That's where it's so bad, man. It comes off just as holier than now. It's like, yeah. I understand the health concerns, but Jesus Christ.
So to me, you know, he said all that, and all he basically had to say was, I won't play. He won't get a salary then. I mean, that's the thing. If he doesn't want to put himself at risk, then don't play. You won't get your salary then, you know, because I hate to back up MLB for a minute, but – MLB didn't create the COVID, so it doesn't mean they should be on the hook for your salary even if you don't want to play.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to play, fine. Don't play this season. But you're not getting your $7 million, $3.5 million, or whatever the it is you think you're going to get. You're just not going to get it. And I think that's the part he was not seeing, is that he still has that choice. And it comes with the inherent risk that everybody is going to take on. We all take on risk, you know. And you have to know if it's worth your time and energy for the money that you're willing to get for that risk.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think any of us in a heartbeat would be $3.5 million to go play 82 games. And I might be exposed to COVID. Well, hell, I'm working at Safeway as a checker right now. I'm exposed every day. Yeah, I'll take that.
82. I mean, he's a starting pitcher. It's 16 games.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah, he can isolate all he wants. It's up to him, right? He can sit up in the upper deck during games that he's not
playing. Sorry, you can't play Call of Duty with your buddy one night in the hotel room. I mean, shit. 16 starts, man. You can't keep it together for 16 starts? Wow.
I know. You know, Bryce Harper kind of backed him up, but I think he did that just in kind of a bro moment. Like, I gotta have the players back. Because he has since come out with his own proposals on how the season should go. And he's talking about, you know, crazy schedules, and he's having fun with it, and it's fun to talk about. So he's clearly, Bryce Harper is not saying, I'm not going to play. He just is saying, look, he said it, and I'm with him. But it doesn't mean that Bryce Harper is not going to play. I think he totally wants to. So, yeah, we'll see how this develops. They're talking about, you know, spring training happening next month. So this needs to rapidly be put into a plan and an agreement. Otherwise, the July starting date, they were predicting around July 4th. But even if it was a week or two later, they're going to be cutting the season down to 70 games, 60 games, 50 games. And at some point, you just got to be like, we'll just scrap the season, you know? You know, and they're not going to play into December or anything like that. Because they would have to move everything to the warm states. So you couldn't be playing in all the home ballparks. So, or everyone plays at the dome stadiums, you know? It's something that's just not going
to
happen.
Bring everybody to Vegas, you know?
Yeah. Play the new Raider stadium.
Right? Oh, man, it's cool looking, let me tell you.
Kind of looks like a Roomba from the outside, but.
Okay. You're not the first time I've heard that from. The wife did the same thing the other day. When you look at it from, I've only seen it in the dark. I'll actually see it in the light later today. I have to take a ride out that way.
Yeah, no, I haven't been to Vegas 9 years now, so I need to get down there again. But all right, we're going to wrap up today with a couple of bits of more lighthearted news. First of all, on Tuesday yesterday, the Chronicle's Hank Schulman reported that the Giants are guaranteeing pay through September for all of their full-time employees that are not on the baseball side. This includes roughly 350 employees and covers roles like media relations, ticket sales, and corporate partnerships. That's pretty cool. That's a great move because that's a lot of money. I know this is not including, you know, the ushers and the concessions. I get that. There's probably people really upset that they couldn't cover them too. And I think they did cover them through a certain part of the season.
And those people that you're talking about, the ushers and concessions, if I'm not mistaken, they're actually contracted through a different company. And yeah, so probably. No offense to the Giants, you know, like it's good that they've stepped up at times, but like they're not 100% on the hook for those people. My stepdaughter is an usher at a couple stadiums in Detroit, and it's been her company that she's had to deal with, not the teams.
Right. Yeah. Usually you have a contractor that comes in and does that. But I mean, like our buddy Matt Chisholm, who works for media relations for the Giants, he would be one of these people that they're covering. Right. So because he doesn't have a job right now. I mean,
right. You know,
he's media relations, so it's like he's not doing anything with the media, or very little, I should say.
The ticket sales people aren't doing anything. They're sitting they're at literally home, doing too.
Well, and I wonder about that, because the Giants still have yet to issue any refunds for games that have not even been played yet. They're kind of waiting this out, because they don't want to give out the refunds in chunks. Like, okay, let's do April. Oh, we got to do May now. Oh, let's do June. I think they're waiting to see what's going to happen with the schedule and the season until they start issuing refunds. But I have seen on Twitter, there are quite a few people that are like, look, man, I already put out $500 for tickets this year that have already been canceled. Please give me my money back. I need that money. And they haven't done that yet. So we'll see. Also, a video game called Out of the Park Baseball. I actually have a copy of it myself, although I have last year's version, not this year's version. But Out of the Park Baseball is having a dream season bracket number 2. They had a first one already, where the old Yankees won it, I think. But anyway, this is going to be featuring 64 historic teams, and it's going to include the 1954 and 2012 Giants, which is pretty cool. Now, they're going to be in separate brackets, so they won't face each other until the equivalent of the league championship series, if they both should get there. But the 54 Giants will take on the 69 Cubs. Both of them were managed by Leo DeRocher. And then the 2012 team will take on the 1998 Padres, both managed by Bochy, of course. That's so I thought that was kind of interesting how they matched up those teams where both managers, or the same manager, managed both teams in those brackets. So that'll be fun to watch. Kind of curious to see what this – it's just a baseball simulator, folks. It means nothing. I saw people get all excited about it when their team was advancing and stuff. It's like, look, it's whatever. But it's still going to be fun to kind of talk about. That said, I'm not streaming these games. I'm not even watching Hunter Pence play his MLB Neither show or anything
and
like
imagine
that.
Setting up a bracket to determine your favorite Giants, current Giants player, and losing in the final to Buster Posey like Crawford did.
Yeah, wasn't that something? Oh, man, that was pretty – okay, whatever.
Yeah, this I like the whole 54 versus 69, the Giants versus the Cubs, because the Giants should whoop them, to be honest. 69 Cubs shouldn't even be in a dream season bracket to begin with.
I don't think
but
so
it
either.
Is cool that they match them up. That's really funny.
Yeah, and I don't have all the details in front of me. I have the bracket in front of me. I thought it was I thought every single bracket is a best of seven. I'm pretty sure.
I mean, it's a simulation. I would hope so.
Yeah, because they can't just do one game. Yeah, right, this is baseball. Was best of seven. Yeah. Anyway, you can log on. Yes, every round is a best of seven. There it is. Okay, cool. So anyway, you can go to MLB.com/dream-bracket, and I'll put that in the show notes to follow along. There's actually a little contest, a challenge that you can enter. You can predict that each of the four region winners – total games played, total runs scored, blah, blah,
that
blah.
That 2012 team, that 2012 Giants team might surprise some people and make a deep run. They were a pretty good team.
Yeah,
that was their most talented of the three championship seasons. So they might make a little bit of a run.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of funny, though, because you know I would rate the 1993 Giants as probably the best team I've seen in my lifetime. And they didn't even make the playoffs because they won 103 games, you know? The 2012 team, although they dominated and won the West by a ton, and then just, I shouldn't say trounced through the playoffs because that's where they had those epic elimination
comebacks,
game streaks.
Yeah.
But then, of course, they swept the Tigers in the World Series, who are supposed to crush them. Yeah, so they won, what, 94 games, I believe, in 2012. So that's a nine-game difference right there.
Yeah, but they, turned it on at the right time, and so they're that kind of team.
Yeah, they did. Anyway, I think that's all I got for today, other than just on a side note, if you guys are science buffs, tonight I'll be a guest on the podcast This Week in Science to talk about some of our recent discoveries of the Octopus Garden and Whale Fall in the last year and a half. That'll be 8 p.m. Pacific tonight at twis.org/live. That's twis.org/live. And they'll also be putting that up on their podcast feed and YouTube channel for later consumption, considering that you might even be listening to this podcast tomorrow. It might already be done. But I would check it out if you like science. We're going to be talking a lot about that and many other science thingies tonight at 8 o'clock.
That's cool.
Yeah, it'd be good. So you got anything else, Eric? Any nuggets of wisdom from your first week here in the Pacific time zone?
It's the best time zone. I already love it. I mean, I'm getting screwed up because I'm realizing all my friends, like, you know, I'll watch certain things on Twitter with people and I'm like, I get on and I'm like, oh, wait a second. It's 9 o'clock. That means it's already midnight back home. Everybody's off. Everybody's done. Like, I totally forget the time difference, but I'm looking forward to it. I love it. I love it out here. I'm glad that when stuff gets underway, if I can make the trips out to Oracle, I know they haven't, we don't know when, but I'm guessing next year will probably be the case. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's nicer to be out here. I don't know if our feed sounds any better, but to me it sounds so much clearer than when I was across the country.
Yeah, that gave me a thought, actually, when I heard that Newsom said, you know what, we might have pro sports without fans. Now, the players, the teams, of course, have that large supporting cast that's all would be involved in that testing capacity, right, and contact tracing. What I'm really curious about, because people would still have to work at the park in terms of security, right? You know, opening up doors, setting things up, putting out the buffet table for the players, whatever it may be. There's got to be some minimum level of capacity at the park that may or may not necessarily come into contact with the players and may or may not be a part of that tracing program. If they are, great, whatever. I'm curious because you watch these KBO games. There's media, right? There's media sitting there. And so I'm curious as what their media policy is going to be. Now, clearly, I think the big guys are going to be able to attend in some capacity. That's great. You're going to still have Hank Shulman and Bags and all those guys there.
They're each going to get a section to themselves.
But exactly. So I'm wondering if small fish like you and I, who used to be able to attend almost any game we wanted to with proper, you know, with 24, 48 hour notice, what the policies will be this year. Because if it's going to be just in the media room, I would imagine they're only going to allow an X number of people there, right? They're going to socially distance. They're going to have everyone minimum 6 feet apart. You know, I don't know what they're going to do about the restrooms and, you know, the soda fountain machine and the water and the clubhouse meals or the meals upstairs. They're probably going to have to modify all that. But for some schmuck like me that just wants to come and cover the game, are they going to have like a playoff special section in the third deck or something? Or are they going to be able to spread media? Because now there's not going to be any fans. It would make sense to maybe put someone down with their laptop in the sections behind the screen at home plate, right? Just as long as everybody is 4 or 5 seats apart, 2 rows apart, that kind of thing. I wouldn't see why that couldn't be possible. So I'm really intrigued because, you know, I would love to go cover a game this year if this is the season that we're going to have. That said, my wife would probably be dead set against it.
What are you doing? How many things you're going to touch?
You're going to touch all these things? Yeah, I'll be like, yeah, but, you know, it's baseball. So, and I'm going to be outdoors and no one's going to be by me. So it should be okay.
I'll wear a mask. I'll wash my hands. We'll be all right.
It is. It's really interesting to think about that. I wonder what their policies are going to be. So I'm sure that will only be formulated after an agreement and a starting date and all that and a schedule has been put in place. So anyway, stay tuned for that. That'll be cool. All right. Well, that'll do it for episode 194. We'll certainly be back in a week or two, certainly in a week if we have developing news about the situation or anything else major to talk about. Other than that, we might be back in a couple of weeks. But you can follow us, of course, on Facebook. You can like us there. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can follow us individually on Twitter. I'm at ChadK21, and Eric is at 2OutHits with the number 2. And, of course, as always, check out our blog at TortureCast.com where we post our podcasts, our show notes, and occasional articles. Did I miss anything, Eric?
Not at all.
All right, cool. Well, then for Eric, this is Chad signing off, and we'll see you next time for 195. A-boom.
Vegas, baby. Vegas.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TortureCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.